Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Balabha Gidivara Nahari. Gopi Jana Balabha Gidivara Nahari. Sharanandana Bhaja Janarandana Sharanandana Bhaja Janarandana Yamuna Kiravana Chahari. Yamuna Kiravana Chahari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Balabha Gidivara Nahari. Gopi Jana Balabha Gidivara Nahari. Jasaranandana Braja Janarandana Jasaranandana Braja Janarandana Samuna Kiravana Chari. Yamuna Kiravana Chari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Shri Mad, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Jaya Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa, Hare Vidyakacharya Ashto, Tadasita Shri Mad, His Divine Grace, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai. Askan Bibiti Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai. Iskam Guru Vrinda ki jai. Prem Sagaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Go Gopinath Shyamakun Radhakun Giri Govardhana ki jai. Shri Vrindavan Dhamma ki jai. Shri Mayapur Dhamma ki jai. Tosi Maharani ki jai. Bhakti Devi ki jai. Ganga Jamuna Maya ki jai. Sankirtan Jagna ki jai. Brihat Madanga Chansana Bhaktishta Bhushana ki jai. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Their Transcendental Lordship, Shri Shri Gorni Thai Ki Jai, Shri Shri Krishna Balarama Ki Jai, Shri Shri Radhashama Sundar Ki Jai, Shri Shri Lakshmi Nishringa Ki Jai, Gaura Premanande, Samaveda Bhakta Vinda Ki Jai, all glorious to the assembled devotees, all glorious to the assembled devotees, all glorious to the assembled devotees, all glorious to Shri Shri Guru and Gauranga. Oh. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Okay, so we're reading today from chapter 17 of the 11th canto. The chapter is entitled Lord Krishna's Description of the Vanashram System. So I'll read the chapter summary. First, previously the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna had assumed the form of Hamsa and glorified the duties of the Brahmachari and Grihastha orders. In this present chapter, Lord Krishna further describes these matters to Uddhava. In preparing for this class, I was looking for where Lord Hamsa had glorified these duties of the Brahmacharya and Grihasthas, and I couldn't find it anywhere in the Veda base. I finally found it. It was in chapter 13 of this canto, text 38, in a commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He describes how Hamsa Avatar actually did describe about Vanashram there, but it's not manifest in the Bhagavatam somehow or other. And I corresponded with Banaswami about that, and it just, he talked about it, but he didn't explicitly explain it. You know, this is what Maharaj was saying. You know, didn't come out in the writing. It wasn't somehow either recorded in the Bhagavatam. Maybe in other Puranas, but he didn't offer that. Anyway, little point of interest. After Uddhava inquires from Sri Krishna about the duties of the social and religious orders of the Vanashram society, the Lord replies that in this first age, Satyuga, there was only one social order called Hamsa. In that age, men were automatically dedicated to pure devotional service from their very birth. And since everyone was perfect in all respects, the age was called Krita Yuga. Be nice if you're at birth to be automatically dedicated to pure devotional service. Save us a lot of headaches, boy, I tell you, huh? Okay, the Vedas were then manifest in the form of the sacred syllable Om, and the Supreme Lord was perceived within the mind in the form of the four-legged bull of religion. There were no formalized processes of sacrifice, and the sinless people, who were naturally inclined to austerity, simply engaged in meditation on the personal form of the Lord. In the following age, Treta Yuga, there became manifest from the heart of the Supreme Personality of Godhead the three Vedas, and from them the three forms of the sacrificial fire. At that time, the system of four varnas and ashramas, which prescribes material and spiritual duties for the different members of society, appeared from the bodily limbs of the Lord. According to how the social divisions took birth from higher and lower features of the Lord's body, they became endowed with higher and lower qualities. After this description, Lord Krishna explains the natures of persons in each of the four varnas and of those who are outside the limits of the varnas. He also describes those qualities that pertain to humanity in general. Members of the higher orders are qualified to accept second birth. After receiving the sacred thread initiation, they should go to live in the Gurukul, the home of the spiritual master. For the pacified mind, the student, Brahmachari, should absorb himself in study of the Vedas. He should keep matted hair and is forbidden to wash his teeth. Prabhus, are you aware of this now?
Yes.
Prepare a nice seat for himself. Okay, so you're doing that. At least you got that part covered. Talk when bathing or evacuating. Cut his hair. It's forbidden to cut his hair and nails or at any time past 7. He must regularly perform worship at the 3 junctures of the day and must render devotional service to a spiritual master in a spirit free from envy. The brahmachari must offer to the guru whatever food or other things he obtains by begging. He accepts for his maintenance whatever remnants of the Lord he has granted. He should render menial service to the spiritual master by massaging his feet and worshiping him, and should avoid all sense gratification and strictly maintain the vow of celibacy. With his mind, body, and words, he should worship the Supreme Lord in the form of the Supersoul in the way prescribed for him. For brahmachari, seeing or touching women and conversations or sports in the company of women are absolutely disallowed. Cleanliness and ritual purification by water should be observed by members of the spiritual orders of society. I'm sorry? Cleanliness and ritual purification by water should be observed by members of all the spiritual orders of society. Everyone is also advised to always remember that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Super Soul dwelling in within the hearts of all. After studying all the different aspects of the Vedas, a Brahman who has material desires may take permission from his spiritual master and enter family life. Otherwise, if he has no material desire, he may become a vanaprast or sannyasi. The proper order of succession should be followed in changing from one spiritual order to the next. One who wishes to enter the household order should accept a wife who is of the same social class, who is not objectionable, and who is somewhat younger in age than he. The obligatory duties of the 3 classes who are twice born, the brahmanas, the kshatriyas, and vaishyas, are worship of the Lord, study of the Vedas, and giving charity. The occupational duties of accepting charity, teaching others, and performing sacrifice for others are the privilege of the brahmanas alone. If a brahmana considers that his consciousness is contaminated by engaging in these occupations, he may sustain his existence by collecting grains from the fields. If he is disturbed by poverty, the Brahman may, out of necessity, accept the business of a kshatriya or vaishya, but he should never take the occupation of a shudra. In a similar situation, a kshatriya may take the occupation of a vaishya, and a vaishya that of a shudra. But when the emergency is past, it is not fitting to continue earning one's living by a lower occupation. A Brahman who is properly fixed in his duty, personal duty, rejects all insignificant material desires, always serves the Vaishnavas, and is under the protection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The householder should study the Vedas every day and maintain his wards with money honestly earned by his own occupation. As far as possible, he should execute worship of the Lord by ritual sacrifices. Remaining unattached to material life and fixed in devotion to the Supreme Lord, the householder may finally take the order of sannyas so that he can fully involve himself in the Lord's worship. What did I say? Oh, boy. Sorry. The householder may finally take the order of vanaprast so he can fully involve himself in the Lord's worship. If he has a grown son, he may directly take the renounced order of sannyas. But persons who are excessively lusty after women, who have no proper discrimination, and who are extremely attached to wealth and possessions, remain perpetually in anxiety over the welfare of their family members and are doomed to take their next birth in a lower species of life. Hare Krishna. Okay, so we're covering texts 1 and 2 today. Wow, not much time left, huh? Okay. I'm sorry? Yeah, we did that in the beginning. That's one thing I didn't goof up on. I think I did it 4 times rather than 3. But other than that, it was pretty good. So why don't we just chant the first shloka responsively? Is that okay? And then we'll do the other one in unison. Okay. Shri Uddhava Uvacha. Yastvaya Bihita Purvam. Dharmastvad Bhakti Lakshana. Vanashrama Charavatam. Sarvesham Dvipadam Api. Shri Uddha Uvacha. Yastvaya Bihita Purvam. Dharmastvad Bhakti Lakshanah. Vanashrama Charavatam. Sarvesham Dvipadamapi. Shri Uddha Uvacha. Sri Uddhava said, "My dear Lord, previously you described the principles of devotional service that are to be practiced by followers of the Vanashram system and even ordinary, unregulated human beings. My dear lotus-eyed Lord, now please explain to me how all human beings can achieve loving service unto you by the execution of their prescribed duties." Purport. Lord Krishna has already elaborately explained the process of Jnana Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, and Astanga Yoga. Anybody know which chapters those were in? Okay, Jnana Yoga was 13. Bhakti was 12 and 14, and Astanga was 15. And then what do we do in 16? You get a piece of birth if you get the question right. All right, I get the answer right. That was Vibhuti's, right? Yeah, 16. Okay, so we're on 17 now. Now Uddhava inquires about how those inclined toward karma yoga can achieve the perfection of life, Krishna consciousness. In Bhagavad Gita 4.13, Lord Krishna describes that he's personally the creator of the Vanashram system. Okay, sorry. Chatur Varnyam Maya Shustam Guna Karma Vibhagashaha. Therefore, the ultimate goal of the Vanashram system is to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, one should become a devotee of the Lord and learn the process of pure devotional service. The easiest method of achieving pure devotional service is by the association of pure devotees of the Lord. If one submissively and faithfully associates with pure devotees, one can immediately achieve the perfection of life. A Krishna conscious person is not required to execute all the formalities of the Vanashram system. Because a Krishna conscious person absorbed in love of Godhead automatically gives up all sense gratification and mental speculation. Those human beings who do not follow the Vanashram system are here referred to as dvipadam, or two-legged. In other words, one who does not follow the religious path of life is known to be human only by the possession of two legs. Even ordinary animals and insects are eagerly engaged in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. The human being, however, is distinguished from such lower forms of life by his capacity to become religious and ultimately to love God in pure Krishna consciousness. Translation again. Sri Uddhava said, "My dear Lord, previously you described the principles of devotional service that are to be practiced by followers of the Vanashram system and even ordinary unregulated human beings. My dear lotus-eyed Lord, now please explain to me how all human beings can achieve loving service unto you by the execution of their prescribed duties." Om Gyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Umlitam Gena Kaishmak Shri Guruve Namaha. So it's so ecstatic to see how there's a resurgence in the enthusiasm to distribute Prabhupada's books in the Nuramanreti community. And I was reflecting upon my years of doing book distribution, and they're connected one of my favorite approaches to what's covered today in the verse and purport. I stretched it a little bit, but you'll see there's a relevance to it. I spent a lot of time working in airports. Divyanka and myself and Ragatmaka, we were out there for many years. And one strategy that the Supreme Lord revealed to me was I would stop a person and I would say, get to know him a little bit, where you're coming in from. And I'd say, "Well, I'm from Nashville." He'd say, "I'm from Nashville, Tennessee." And I'd say, "Well, no wonder you look so blissful." And, just kind of yuck it up a little bit. And then I'd say, "Sir, I'd like to ask you a personal question." I'd like to ask you a personal question. "Which do you like better, pleasure or pain?" And the guy looked at me like I'm a little nuts, and said, "Well, pleasure, of course." And he's probably with his wife. So I said, "Ma'am, I think you married the right guy here." And so then I would say, "This book allows you to achieve the highest levels of pleasure possible for a human being. Does that sound okay to you?"
"Yeah."
"Okay." And so then I say, "So you get, before you go, you got to do me one small favor. You got to promise me that you won't stay up all night long reading this book. Can you handle that?" And then they'll agree And I said, look, I don't want your wife coming back mad at me for keeping you guys up all night long. Okay, so you promise? Pretty good, you know, worked pretty good. Anyway, so now getting back to today's verse and purport, which do you like better, pleasure or pain? This reminds me, we're talking about pleasure, and you guys are trying to figure out, what has this got to do with today's verse and purport? Well, you'll see. I'm just trying to keep everybody awake here and warm. Okay, so Lord Rishabhdev, he starts in fifth chapter, the fifth canto, with his instructions to his sons. Nayam deho deha bhajan niloke kastan kaman ahate vidbhujamye tapo divyam putrakra gena sattvam sudya dhyajmad brahmasokyam tanantam. Okay, so of all the living entities that have acquired human these bodies, one who's acquired the human form shouldn't labor hard day and night for sense gratification, which is available for dogs and hogs that eat stool. Okay, what one should do is perform penance and austerities to achieve the divine position of devotional service. Because when he gets to that position, what happens? He achieves, this incredible level of transcendental happiness, which is superior to material happiness, and it continues forever. That's what you get if you read the book, if you don't stay up all night long reading it. You get the highest level of pleasure available to a human being. This is what takes place through the process of devotional service. It's a fact, right? That's why most of us are here. You know, it's a lot better than what's out there. Okay, so that's the pleasure part. Okay, so now, does anybody have an experience with pain? Yeah? It's there quite often. Now, there's in Bhagavad Gita, 5th chapter, 22nd verse. Anybody know it? Yehi sam sparsaja boga dukha yonaya evate adyantavanta kanteya na teshu ramate buddha. You know it? No? You should. It's a good one to know. An intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery, which are due to contact with the material senses. O son of Kunti, such pleasures have a beginning and an end, and so the wise man does not delight in them. The end of the purport, Prabhupada says, the more one is addicted to material pleasures, the more he's entrapped by material miseries. Wow. Connect those two. We could completely transform the advertising industry. Is that what you call it, industry? If we just insert this into the middle of their proposals for happiness, because that's what it's all about, right? They're offering something. You got this carrot in front of your nose. If you do this, then you're going to be completely blissed out. You're going to be so happy. But it doesn't work. It's just the opposite. It's a hard thing to bear in mind, but that's the case. As we take up devotional service, that understanding is extremely important to us. Okay, like we accept this within our intelligence. But then in order to actually pull it off, we got to get this higher taste, right? Vishaya vinivartante narahara shadehina asavraja param disvanivartate. Okay, I'll come to that last line. All right, so it's not such an easy thing, you know, controlling the mind, chanchalam hi mana krishna pramati balavadudam tashaham nigraham vanye manye vayor eva saduskuram. So it's more difficult than controlling the wind, control the mind, which is, there's an interesting metaphor that Prabhupada uses in the purport. It's from one of the Upanishads. And there's a BBT painting of the of this like terrified personality in the back of this chariot, and then there's this strong intelligence, and then the steering instruments are the reins, and then you got these horses, one horse with a nose on his chest, another one with his ear on his chest, and then one with a tongue on his chest, and another one with a hand. And so it's just really difficult to do. But, you know, the Lord's been very kind to us, and he's given us Chaturvarnyam Mayashistam Guna Karma Vibhagasaha. He's given us a system to actually bring us from this craziness into a regulated and sattvic life where we can actually understand what our purpose is in life. Now, so how does this, how does the Vanashram work? There's a lot of, ever since I joined the movement, and Prabhupada, he had this room conversation, which I'll cite a little bit later in Mayapur. Everyone's been talking about how we have to get Vanashram established. And it seems like, and I know there's, when I lived in Mayapur, I used to attend GBC meetings, and I got the understanding a lot of GBCs don't want to go into this one because it's too hard to figure out, you know, how it's actually going to be practically implemented. So there's a lot of discussion about it, and, you know, attempts are made, different things like that. But first, you know, how does the whole thing work? So I think the first thing that maybe we could do today is identify what the problem is, the problem that we're trying to address. In third chapter, 37th verse of Gita, there's a famous verse, Kama Esha Krodha Esha Rajaguna Samudbhava Mahashano Mahapatma Vidyanami Havayanam. So here Krishna identifies it's lust only, Arjuna, born out of contact with a mode of passion, later transformed into wrath. This is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. Okay, so, and then Prabhupada uses an analogy of milk in contact with tamarind, and it turns into yogurt, right? So when we come into the material world, come in contact with passion, and you know, that pure love that was in our hearts, actually still there, but gets covered over, gets transformed into lust. So then all of this, and then comes degraded into wrath when we don't get what we want. And then the illusion becomes so powerful, and we lose it. We just forget what the purpose of life is, and then it's just a downward spiral. So this is... So the Vanashram system was given to us by Lord Krishna to turn it around the other way, make it an upward spiral. So then, and Prabhupada says in a purport, if therefore the mode of passion, instead of being degraded into the mode of ignorance, is elevated to the mode of goodness by the prescribed method of living and acting, then one can be saved from the degradation of wrath by spiritual attachment. So that's the principle. And, you know, if you're a brahmachari, and anyway, I'll get into that later. I was going to talk about keeping your teeth clean and things like that, but we'll get into that a little bit later. Just trying to keep everybody awake here. Okay, so in a room conversation in Mayapur, February 14th, 1977, Prabhupada speaking, I've just excerpted some of it. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommended Stane Stita. This is from a famous sloka. And if they do not remain in their sthana, this is their position in the social order, then the sahajiya chanting will come. Interesting. Just like the sahajiyas also have got the beads and they have got 36 women. That kind of chanting will go on, just like our, and then indistinct. The name wasn't transcribed. He was not fit for sannyas, but he was given sannyas. And 5 women he was attached and he disclosed. Therefore, vanashram dharma is required. Simply show battle will not do. So the vanashram dharma should be introduced all over the world. And, yes, Vaishnava is not so easy. The vanashram dharma should be established to become a Vaishnava. It's not easy to become Vaishnava. No, it's not a cheap thing. Prabhupada, yes. Therefore, this should be made. Vaishnava, to become Vaishnava is not so easy. If Vaishnava is to become easy, to become Vaishnava is so easy, why so many fall down? It's not easy. Okay, so then, when I started reading this, it said Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he recommended Stane Stita. Anybody know what that came from? What sloka? Yep, that's it. That's a famous one. This is from the prayers of Lord Brahma, in the 14th chapter, the 10th canto. This is the third text. Gane prayasham udapasha namanta eva jivantisan mukaritam bhavadiyavartam stane stita shutigatam tanuvan manubir ye prayasho jita yasi tais trilokyam. I'm sorry. Ye prayasho jita jito yasi tais trilokyam. So those who, even while remaining situated in their established social positions, they throw away the process of speculative knowledge. And with their body, words, and mind, offer all respects to descriptions of your personality and activities, dedicating their lives to these narrations, which are vibrated by you personally and by your pure devotees. Okay, so someone that does that is certainly conquer your lordship, although you're unconquerable by anyone in the three worlds. So conquering Krishna, that's the part, one of the characteristics of pure devotional service in the platform of prema is Sri Krishna Karshani, that Krishna becomes attracted by the devotion. But this attraction is so powerful that actually Krishna becomes, you know, tries his best to serve the bhakti of a devotee. So this was in the discussion between Ramananda Roy and Lord Chaitanya and Madhya. Chapter 8, there was Lord Chaitanya asked Ramananda Roy, could you kindly cite some references about what the Shastric references about what the ultimate purpose of life is? So he began and he gave several, and Lord Chaitanya just rejected them as being external. But then when he got to this one, he said, ah, this is okay. This is all right. This is what Prabhupada means when he said Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommended this. He wanted Ramananda Roy to go further into spontaneous devotion, etc., etc. But this is essentially what Prabhupada meant by Daivi Vanasha. One executes his responsibilities, stays in his established position, but he goes very deeply into hearing and chanting. So actually, you know, to conquer Krishna, you know, to have Krishna become attracted by one's devotion, that's actually in the pure devotional platform. So one could be a jeweler, one could be a farmer, one could be, can be a brahmachari, can be grahastha, can be vanaprast. But if that formula is followed, to offer all respects with body, words, and mind to descriptions of the Lord and his activities and pastimes, and dedicate his life to this process. And this is what's required. That's what's required. And then Devi Vanashram is enacted. There's what's, in the purport, Prabhupada describes that all of the, the followers of Srila Prabhupada, the purport describes how all the rules and regulations of Vanashram aren't really required if someone is practicing bhakti. But then it says, but those who don't follow the rules and regulation of Vanashram are Dvipad Pashu. Sometimes that expression, two-legged animals. So devotees in general, there's a phrase that the Prabhupada used in reference to when he was giving nectar devotion classes in Bombay, and this is Loka Vichar. He said that the discussion was, if someone is drowning, they were discussing that a devotee doesn't get involved with the karma of a non-devotee. It's not his business to do that. And so then Prabhupada gave the example, what if someone is drowning out here? Should we save him or should we let him drown? And this can cause a lot of controversy, so just hang in there. So the Prabhupada, he responded by saying, technically speaking, we shouldn't get involved. That's his karma, let him go for it. But there's a principle called Loka Vichar that, for the sake of preaching, this may sound very heartless, but here's an advanced devotee giving his heart to Krishna, which is the highest platform of love, that he doesn't get it, but for the sake of preaching, then he'll dot his I's and cross his T's. So, for the most part, a devotee follows the rules and regulations of Vanashram. Otherwise, he'll be ostracized. He'll be okay. So, those are some points. We're getting close to the end of the timeline here. So that was the this Devi Vanashram. This is essentially, this verse is what describes that. If one just engages, a lot of times there's a conception that Prabhupada wanted us to just work, But there's a problem if we don't have this taste for hearing and chanting. And that's described in the second chapter, the first canto, Dharma Sanushita Pumsam Vikshvakshina Katasuya Nupodiyad Yati Radim Shama Eva Hikevalam. Occupational activities a man performs according to his own position are only so much useless labor if they do not provoke attraction for the message of the personality of Godhead. So I guess the big question is, if we really want to implement Vanashram, how do we get that attraction? I think we can first describe how not to get it. And this, Prahlad Maharaj, when he was offering instructions to his father, he said, Natevidhu Swartakatim hi Vishnu, Durashaye Bahir Atamanina, Andayatandaya Upagiyamanas, Tepisha Tantram Urudamni Badha. So, persons who are strongly entrapped by the consciousness of enjoying material life, they accept as their leader a guru, someone who's also situated in the same situation, or, you know, blind, he's blind. And they don't have a sense that the goal of life is to go home back to Godhead. It's just not in their mind at all. So then there's an analogy given of just as blind men, led by another blind man, they miss the right path and they fall into a ditch. So materially attached men, led by other materially attached men, they're tightly bound by the ropes of fruitive labor. And those ropes are made of very strong cords. And they again and again are put into material life, suffering the threefold miseries. Okay, so that's what you don't do, okay, if you want to have an attraction. There's a lot of media out there telling you how to live your life. And I see a lot of devotees, they start getting into this stuff. But it's not really what will make things work in terms of achieving life's ultimate goal. You know, first to be very much attracted to the glorification and descriptions of the Lord, and then dedicating one's life to that. In other words, having a really strong sadhana. That's what's really going to make things work in our lives. So how do we get that attraction? If that's not how we do it, then Prahlad Maharaj, in the next verse, this is 7.5.32, he describes how you do it. Naisham matish tavad arukramangram spisha dinarto pagamo yararta ahiyasam pararojo bashekam niskinchana nam nam navita yavat. So, unless they smear their bodies with the dust of the lotus feet, a pure devotee, completely free from material contamination, it cannot be attached to the lotus feet of the Lord. So that's the key. We have to have a, you know, we have to be connected with the spiritual master, yasha deve para bhaktir yata deve tata guru. So then there's a really nice verse from Madhya, Leela 22. Krishna bhakti janma mula hoya saru sangha, Krishna prema janme tenho puna mukya anga. The root cause of devotional service to Lord Krishna is association with advanced devotees. Even when one's dormant love for Krishna awakens, association with devotees is still most essential. Okay, so I'll just end with a little reflection. Then we'll open up for other reflections and questions and comments. I quoted from the end of the purport of Bhagavad Gita 5.22, the Yehi Samsparsha Jaboga verse. The more one is addicted to material pleasures, the more he's entrapped by material miseries. So it's not that when one becomes a sadhaka, that attraction to the material pleasures ends. Still there, but the sadhaka fixes in his mind that sense gratification equals misery. That's one thing. But then he gets the higher taste, which makes the whole thing work. The higher taste comes from smearing his body with the dust from the lotus feet of a pure Vaishnava. In other words, he's serving that Vaishnava, dedicating his life in a very humble mood. Okay, so I'll end here. I'll read the translation once again. It's, my dear Lord, O Almighty, Mighty Armed One, previously in your form of Lord Hamsa, you spoke to Lord Brahma, those religious principles that bring supreme happiness to the practitioner. My dear Madhava, now much time has passed, and that which you previously instructed will soon practically cease to exist, O subduer of the enemy. Yeah. Go ahead, Bill.
Hare Krishna. I was just curious about, in the introduction you talked about the different ashrams and Brahmacharya ashram, you know, not just here but in many other places in the Bhagavatam, it describes the different ashrams and how one practices the ashram. Like, I remember when I first decided I wanted to be a brahmachari, practice as a brahmachari, I was trying to read quotes about brahmacharya, and they didn't seem very practical. Like, I couldn't even find, like, it says you're supposed to live in the house of the guru and like that, and this is like your activities. So it didn't really seem like that's what goes on, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering, is there a modern, I mean, I've caught it over the years, kind of caught on to like how brahmacharya is in the 21st century practice, but is there like a, does Prabhupada talk about the modern practicalities or the or some other shastra that you know of that talks about the, or your, maybe your own insight about modern practicalities of how to practice varnashram? Obviously also other ashrams too. And then also we're devotees, you know, we're trying to be devotees at the same time. So Prabhupada has said, even in like Grihastha ashram, oh, but if you're a devotee, then it's not like this quite. If you know what I'm talking about, he's talking about like, you know, for example, associating with your wife, you know, in the Vedic custom, it says that you live in separate bedrooms and don't see each other during the day like this. But then Prabhupada says, if you're a devotee, then it's not like that. So I was just wondering, how do we know what to do, basically?
That's a good question. I don't know if I can give you a comprehensive answer in this class, but it's
okay.
One of the things that Prabhupada stressed in that room conversation in Mayapur was that there be extensive training. That education, Vanashram education, should be established so people do know what to do. Mm. Now, after many years of maybe not such a successful track record in the Grihastha ashram and our movement, devotees on the Grihastha vision team came together. There's about six members of that team, and they created Grihastha training courses, you know, to reduce the lack of success that had taken place, you know, in that ashram. A very high divorce rate, even higher than outside, you know. At least, maybe it's better now, but that was what was going on. Really disruptive to the spiritual lives of the devotees. So it's, you know, the modern application is these, actually in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on this chapter, this is secondary bhakti. This is what's described, interestingly enough. And so this is why it seems that the BBT editors made such a point in the beginning that we're not obliged, once we take up devotional service, to follow all of these rules and regulations so strictly. On the other hand, kind of the guiding light for making decisions on what, you know, how to live our lives, you know, how to, you know, day-to-day decisions, moment-to-moment decisions. We can look at, and Srila Prabhupada describes this as Rupa Nugas, you know, followers of Rupa Goswami. So Rupa Goswami made a very concise and succinct description in his definition, very concise and succinct definition of pure devotional service. Anyabhilashita sunyam jnana karmadinabhitam anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhaktir uttama. So the what I'm kind of honing in on here in response to your question is that the devotee, he accepts what's favorable for pleasing Krishna. So that may take really, you know, but that requires sincerity. You know, one really has to be there, really want, okay, I'm not going to try and satisfy my senses, I'm going to try and satisfy Krishna's senses. And then so then we accept and reject. We make decisions on that basis. You would have, if you didn't brush your teeth, you would have a tough time in your book distribution service. You know, people could, you know, wait a minute. You know,
cut my nails and my hair.
Yeah, well, yeah. If you didn't cut your nails and your hair, that also might be tough. You know, so you're accepting what's favorable. Yeah. And, you know, you've got nice white teeth, so I can see you're doing that well. So, you know, this is kind of the principle. We accept what's favorable and we reject what's unfavorable. It's also a symptom of surrender. Anukulyena, is it? Sankalpa Pratikulyena Vajrayana. And but that's, you know, a big element of the whole process of pure devotional service, which is what Prabhupada wanted us to practice. Okay, so is that right? Does that make sense? I mean, you know, in terms of, I think you would probably find where there are very successful brahmachari ashrams, like at Govardhan Echo Village or Pune, you know, there's like the formulas have been worked out more. So just like the Grihastha Vision Team, these were successful long-term Grihasthas that came together and analyzed what the problems were and how to deal with them, you know, how to make it work. And, you know, I think they offer a pretty good package with it. So,
do they have books? Do you know if they have like a manual for each of these?
I would be surprised if he just asked, do they have a manual? Does the Chopraditam have a manual? I would be surprised if they didn't. I don't think I've ever seen it. I wasn't, you know, when I started going to the Chopradi Temple, I wasn't wearing saffron anymore, so it wasn't my business to. They're like that. You know, they're very educationally based, as you know. Like, for some, the first 2 years after someone, Madam T has a question, so she's. Oh.
What I've heard that they're not allowed to say no.
Oh.
The brahmacharis.
When they're asked to do something, yeah. Then they're out of
the
ashram. That's right. If they're asked to do something, don't say no.
Yeah, that's like
the unlearning. Yeah, so that's takes a little humility, I would say. You know, some surrender. Kalyapanikaru.
I find that the start of everything is self-acceptance. Honesty is the last leg of religion available to us in this age. And so in self-acceptance would take place in a meditative, introspective state. We notice the difference between the observer or the consciousness and the nature. And if we invite the mode of goodness into that state, the observer will not try to manipulate the nature, but he'll accept it. I am like this. I believe that this is the key to Varnashram Dharma. It's not complicated at all. It's a question of just quietly seeing what is, and not trying to change it. From that point, self-acceptance, I believe that life, either material life or spiritual life, begins from that point. If we try to begin a spiritual life without self-acceptance, then it's going to be artificial and it won't be successful.
Good. Also, kind of one of the points that you made about self-acceptance. Obviously, we may not want to accept some of the anartha's side of ourselves, and we recognize it, but then we realize we've got work to do. Does that make sense within the paradigm that you're describing? So, in other words, when we do self-assessment, we can see, okay, this is my nature. I'm not going to try and change it in this lifetime. I accept that. But also when we're self-assessing, we see different anarthas that we do need to work on. And not that we feel bad about it, but there's one way to work on them, and that's to cry to the Holy Name and then let the Holy Name give us his mercy. And then we can get free to that and get you know, get on with our lives in a powerful way.
Yeah, I would think that we observe your narratives, and we don't, in the mode of passion, that we don't apply the mind in the mode of passion to will away those anartas.
Right.
We just peacefully be with them. We sit beside them. You can even invite them in. Oh, here's this anarta. Good morning. I haven't seen you yet this morning. Good morning. Please come and sit down. Which is what Haridas Thakur did when the prostitute came. He didn't try to will her away or shrink away. He was peaceful. It was self-acceptant. This is my nature.
One point that comes to my mind, in the, there's a couplet in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Bhajan Rahasya. And he starts out by saying that one who fails to... This is his commentary on Harinam Chintamani. One who fails to try and free himself from anartas does not achieve the mercy of the holy name in this lifetime. Okay, and the next, the next verse seems almost contradictory. He says that on one's own, I think this is the point about accepting where you're at, one cannot free himself from anartas. But if he cries to the holy name, and then he's, it's kind of a, it almost seems like a hyperbole. He says, if one cries to the holy name for several days, then the holy name will remove all the anartas from his heart. So it's not like there's a condemnation. Sometimes devotees, when they have an overwhelming anarta, they go into a whole self-esteem crisis and condemn themselves. But because on their own they can't do anything about it. You know, this is you know, there's a very, in the purport to 11.20.27.28 Bhagavatam, there's a about one third of the way into the purport, there's a quoted passage of the mood that someone should have in dealing with his material desires. And this is actually Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, and although it's not, he's not cited in there. It says, basically, it's similar to what Bhaktivinoda Thakur, what I quoted from Bhajan Rahasya. He says, Lord Krishna, I'm going to serve you no matter what. Even if I have to go to hell, I'm going to keep serving you. And these material desires, you know, I can't personally get rid of them. I don't like them. I can't get rid of them. Only you can free me from them. So it's this mood of kind of helpless dependence upon the Lord, but also accepting this is where I'm at. You know, what can I do? You know, you try, but you know, like I made the point about just that, you know, this purport of 522, where Prabhupada describes how the source that sense gratification is the source of all distress, right? And so then. So if the sadhaka understands this, this is some inhibition, you know, to go into areas which is going to blow up in my face. But actually it's the higher taste and the mercy of Krishna pulling away the influence of the modes of material nature that actually makes that work. It's not self-incrimination. It's not beating oneself up, you know, and just going around, in the, you know, depressed because I'm so fallen. But enthusiastically taking shelter of the holy name, and then the holy name does this. Krishna does it. So I think that, you know, kind of fine tunes, at least in my understanding, what you've said. Does it make sense? What, yeah. Okay, we're a little over time. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.